Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, I want to dive deep into artificial intelligence and the use of scanning technology, facial analysis with a really amazing company. We're talking with Jason Rogers, who's a senior research scientist at Noldis Information Technology. And I stumbled upon Noldis a couple of years back and researching what's available for facial expression analysis and looking at, science information technologies that are out there. So Noldis has been, I think, one of the best things out there. It's the premier technology for facial expression analysis. So Jason, tell us a little bit about how long you've been at Noldis, what does Noldis do, and what are the projects going on there?
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me and having me on the podcast. It means a lot. Noldis' mission is essentially empowering behavioral researchers. So we provide software, hardware solutions for the study of all things behavior, from reptiles to bugs to humans to dogs, cats, mice. If there's an animal and you're interested in what it does, Noldis has a solution for them. And the one that we'll be talking most about today is the use of our face reader technology, which is built on the pioneering research of Paul Ekman into universal expressions and then incorporates machine learning, deep learning techniques, and algorithms for automatically finding a face, mapping expressions, classifying emotions or expressions, looking at muscles, et cetera, et cetera.
So fascinating. So, I mean, all of this technology is in use already at airports and security cameras around the world.
Sure.
Does the general public realize how much facial scanning is currently going on?
I think so. And typically you hear about this in a very negative kind of way, right? Of course, I have global entry for the United States. So when I go abroad, when I go to visit our main headquarters in the Netherlands, I come back, it scans my face. It says, "Hey, Jason, welcome back. Hope you had a good trip." And away I go. Of course, we hear about this coming out of other countries who are using it for more crowd control. But I think it's important to note the use of the term facial recognition as opposed to emotional expression analysis in this case. So facial recognition is typically what you would see from, say, the government or from these computer visions to say, "Ah, that's Jason. Here, who is he? Here's all his information. Here's all his details. And oh, I see a face. That's Dr. K. I know everything about her. Here you go." Facial expression analysis that we're going to focus on is really just saying, "Hey, look, here's a face. Here's some muscles. Here's an expression that face is showing. It doesn't know that it's me. It doesn't know anything about me per se, other than here's a face, here's an expression, and these are the muscles that are active." And so we typically conflate facial recognition with facial emotional expression, but they are two very separate things. One needs some oversight, and in fact, the European Commission on AI is dealing with this as we speak. But the one that we focus on is more on the research tool of looking at expressions and being able to say, these are the muscles that are active. This is the expression that's being shown. These are sort of implicit, non-conscious responses that are happening.
You're exactly right. That biometric data, I have global entry too, and I think it's fascinating. And they do have a huge sign that says, if you object to your biometric data being captured, step aside and tell someone. But it is fascinating because that biometric data is being stored somewhere. And I think it leads everyone to, like you said, concerns about confidentiality and facial identity and all of that. And on the other hand, so yes, that requires a lot of supervision. But how much of that biometric data goes into like the machine learning and training? You wonder if in other countries that biometric data is captured and utilized for machine learning to teach the AI that's going to analyze our faces to be able to tell if someone in an airport has a shifty and anxious looking look, like they're up to no good, will they be able to identify that? So there's a little crossover, right?
There certainly is. And in that regard, it's a little bit terrifying. As a normal everyday citizen, it's a terrifying thought.
As a scientist, you realize like there are definitions, boundaries, borders, and necessities for data analysis. But yeah, as an everyday person, you start to wonder.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, for me personally, I donate blood every month. They have my DNA at the blood center. They have all of my biometric data, if you will. My phone, I use my fingerprint to log into my phone. So Samsung has all of my data. So I think we don't realize how much we give away and how much is actually out there. And just sort of me joking and me being me, but the fear that we had about Big Brother isn't really going to be the government. It's going to be Samsung and Apple and Google and those likes of using the data to figure out how to use it against you. But again, those are not the research applications to which we typically tend to focus.
I know nobody reads the fine print. We're all using that Face ID to open our phones and open every app, and God knows what's going to happen with that data.
It's funny that you mentioned that because actually, many, many years ago, and forgive me, I don't remember the exact date, but Paul Ekman, who the pioneer researcher himself, was the sort of senior executive scientific advisor for a company that was ultimately acquired by Apple, and they built all of their face recognition and screen opening and all that technology based on that company. So Paul Ekman, the man himself, has been involved in this through and through. So on all sides of the research side and on the commercial side.
So fascinating. So can you explain a little bit about how Noldis uses the machine learning to analyze facial muscles and expression, the face reader?
Yeah, absolutely. And so when we talk about AI, I tend to think of AI more on the generative side of things, right? So I'm going to use it to generate an image or create a silly song or to create something based on some sort of training. The machine learning, the deep learning that we use, Face Reader was trained on approximately 250,000 images of saying, this is what a face looks like. These are the facial expressions of these face. This is how to recognize a face. And so then the components of that, what it does is it will find an image and it will break apart the entire image, whether that's a static picture or a dynamic picture like a video, and it will break it apart into pixels. And then it will find the elements. So it will find the shape, it'll find ears, it'll find the shape of the face based on that training algorithm. Put the face back together and then model the expressions based on the arrangement of the muscles. And so it's been trained on images and then trained in for its accuracy against human coders, people who are trained to look at facial expressions. And so the program has two basically the same deep learning component, but it has two algorithms, one to find a face automatically in an image. And two, once it finds that face, to model it to say, this is the face. These are the arrangements of the face. Based on the arrangements of that, this is the expression that is then being shown.
Very interesting. So it's open to a lot of interpretation, but based on how it was programmed to read the face, it can analyze it. So for those of you listening who don't really have a good visual of this, imagine a video camera is scanning your face as you make some expressions at rest as well as during expressions. And it grades the amount of muscle movement in certain muscles that are designated as expressive. So frown muscles, angry, frown, downturned mouth, sad, crinkles in the eyes, happy. So it can grade the amount contraction and it can give a rating. And what can be done with that kind of a rating system then, knowing that I'm looking at a sad
Yeah,
face?
facial expressions are an invaluable part of our nonverbal communication. You have to remember that even a part of our brain is special and specialized for the recognition of faces. In fact, if you take your temporal lobe located right about here, and if you imagine this is your brain and you peel open that temporal lobe, right about here is an area called the fusiform gyrus. And it seems to be particular for the recognition of faces because faces are the gestalt of a chin, lips, nose, ears, scalp, et cetera, et cetera. So there are individual features that come together to create this emerging thing that we call a face. So that said, we can use it in, say, consumer testing. So I could hand you a piece of Limburger cheese, for example, and have you smell it. And I can see you just made a nose wrinkle, right? So you automatically know that disgust. responds to it. So I don't have to ask you what you're thinking, right? We don't have a check engine light. We don't have a system diagnostic. There is a disconnect between our quote unquote conscious thoughts and our emotions. We're not connected to those all the time. And so typically when we do product testing, we'll have people try items. We'll say, here, try this or drink this, and then tell me what you think about it. But using this type of technology, we can use it and we can ask them what they think, but we can also automatically detect what their faces are showing. Mm. We can also do this in combination with eye tracking. So we can look and see where the face, where the eyes are actually looking. And you can do this in combination with looking at heart rate and physiological responses for measuring cognitive workload and how stressful tasks are in simulator environments. We've worked with some of the major car companies in Detroit to look at fatigue and sleepiness, like how when people start closing their eyes and start nodding off in long-term driving scenarios.
Interesting. And so
there's a lot of applications.
You'd have the car detect your sleepiness and turn on some safety features for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And you see those being built into vehicles that are even coming out today.
That's fascinating. So as a facial plastic surgeon, I immediately thought about applications for, you know, what we do to control expressions, which these days is neurotoxins and neuromodulators, Botox, to stop the sad, unhappy aging expressions and downward gravitational ones and to improve the uplift and brightness of the face. So how do you feel that this technology can change what we do in facial plastic surgery and aesthetics?
I think that I see two sides of it. If we think to some of the more generative AI sides of things, and maybe some of your more previous guests have talked about being able to take a face and generate what that face might look like after some sort of procedure, which I think is absolutely fascinating and really brilliant. On our side, you could use it to sort of test the effectiveness of the individual treatments on an individual muscle to make sure that they still have use of their facial expressions, or to see if maybe some more is needed or less, or something along those lines to make sure that the targeted aspect was there, they could still use those facial expressions and still make those. I did a project a couple of years ago. I never wrote it up or I did anything with it, but I looked at faces pre and post Botox. Mm. And you do see a blunting of expressions. You do see that people aren't as expressive after Botox treatment, which is, of course, what you expect. That's the point.
Yeah.
But it's something that to note that as an aesthetician, if I'm saying that word correctly, but as someone who specializes in it, this technology could be used to measure the expression and say before and after kind of.
That's interesting. Some people feel like there is some research that shows that Botox can long-term affect muscles, that they re-innervate when the Botox wears off and your frown and expressions come back, but they don't re-innervate 100% the way they used to be. So there may be over time chronic changes in the ability to make expression or more blunting of the expression, muscle atrophy also, of course. So that would be a very cool study to look at, you know, after your toxin, if you've been a long-term toxin user,
yeah,
after your Botox has worn off, are you ever going to get back to your original facial expressions, or are you just different and blunted because your receptors are changed a bit?
That's right.
Yeah.
And the thing I think to remember when we're talking about facial expressions, they're the result of muscles. And
yeah,
every muscle can be trained, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, if I break my leg and I don't use my leg for 6 weeks, when the cast comes off, I'm not going to immediately start running. No, you've got to retrain that muscle. You've got to build that strength back up into it. And so expressions can be trained. You can train your face. You just have to become more aware of it and take more note of it.
Exactly. Well, another initial thought was like, this is such a great training tool. Because as a clinician and as a physician, I have to machine learn 20 years of experience looking at a face, looking at how strong they're frowning and deciding the dose to give and what muscle group to treat. And like, that's open to interpretation. You don't learn that till you have the machine learning of thousands of patients over 5 or 10 years or 20 years. So for a brand new injector to have a tool that could scan the face, detect which exact approximate dosing for what should go into, how many units of Botox should go into each of those muscles, that would be amazing. Like, what a great learning tool. And also double check your own thoughts, right? Like, am I on the right track?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
is
Absolutely.
there a future for that idea? Is that coming or happening that a machine will scan your face and kind of tell you you need this many units of toxin and this much filler to fix that?
If there is, it's a little bit beyond the scope of the research that we tend to focus on.
Yeah.
We would have to rely on experts more on your side of things, who have a level of expertise who can use our technology in that kind of way.
Yeah, I think that's the
The
goal.
way that the
Awesome.
AI is evolving and rapidly improving, it's hard to say where it's even going to go and where it's going to come to. So that's certainly one very fascinating aspect.
Yeah. How else do you see AI facial scanning evolving in the next few years,
Yeah,
Mike?
I would like to see, and we're getting there with videos. And I know we talked about the use of AI and facial recognition, but right now our technology is sort of limited to the screen. And so we're more of screen-based, more simulator-based, less real-world components, right? We've done some studies. In fact, there was a downhill skier who put a GoPro on his helmet to record his face, and very clever, very innovative solution for it. But ideally, being able to get real world environments would be a great offering to be able to understand expressions in a real world context. In addition, our technology, certainly, and many others, are limited to a single face per analysis. So we couldn't do like a movie theater. We get a lot of these questions from movie studios. We couldn't put a theater, we couldn't put a camera in and scan a whole 150 person movie theater and be able to do a crowd sort or be able to look at all the crowd. That's certainly somewhere that I think the technology will get to with computing power, with AI power, with RAM and these things. It's certainly somewhere of growth.
Yes, fascinating. Are there some ethical considerations, do you think, in terms of facial scanning and the technology that's coming? We talked about that a little bit, identity and biometric data use, but
Yes, I think it's a matter of maintaining how the data are captured and stored. When it comes to something like our technology of face reader, it doesn't provide any information other than an estimate of age and potentially gender, which you can turn off. All it gives you is expression data. So again, there's no individual ID biometric data that's being calculated and stored other than what you tell it. So, the ethical concerns really relate to the use of the technology in combination with other methodologies or how that data are stored. We have institutional review boards and we have ethics committees to maintain that for good reason.
okay, I have another exciting question for you. How do you think the facial scanning technology is going to improve our ability to treat aging concerns? One of my thoughts is, generative AI is pretty good at aging a face. It can show you potentially what you might look like in the next 20 years. Is there currently technology that's available to scan the face to analyze facial volumetrics, like facial fat pads? These are things that are under the surface of the skin, or are we going to just be limited to skin landmarks?
That's a great question. I think, well, I wish I could answer that truthfully because I don't quite know what some clever researcher will be able to figure out and be able to look at. I believe that we'll be limited to our facial landmarks. But having said that, we are actually developing technology within the face reader program to look at the pigmentation changes in the cheeks to estimate your heart rate. And
Wow.
it's called photoplethysmography. And so being able to look at heart rate variability from the pigmentation changes in the cheeks. So it's possible to be able to look at underneath the skin to be able to determine what those look like. I'm a little bit older now. I wish at 20 years ago, somebody could have said, hey, Jason, this is what your face is going to look like at 45 if you don't start using skincare and lotion and sunscreen. And so instead I wake up a 45-year-old man with wrinkles and start then treating it accordingly. So I think that the anti-aging side of things will be able to predict and instead of just telling children or telling young adults, this is what your face is going to look like, be able to show them what their faces look like and then develop a long-term skincare routine or a long-term strategy for that is certainly something that I think could be really exciting.
Yeah, that can definitely motivate behavioral change. But that's fascinating that so that plethysmography is going to map circulatory change, like pink flush to the cheek that comes with each beat of the heart, like heart rate. So cool. And that's probably undetectable to the human eye, but the computer can analyze, I imagine, like a little flash of circulation and match that to a pulse. That is fascinating.
That's right.
Yeah. Do you foresee any other, you know, technologies like wearable tech, stuff that can be used in terms of like analyzing facial expression or emotional change?
I think the wearables have come a long way. They have some very exciting and FDA approved wearables for seizure monitoring and for accurate heart rate monitoring. Even your Garmin or your Apple Watch or et cetera will be able to tell you all those things. And I think the combination of those might really be able to get to true emotional understanding, and not just expression understanding, but true emotional understanding of combination of all of those. The other thing that I think is the technology could develop on, but it's going to require some research first from the experts, is on micro expressions. These short, very short, within half a second expressions that we do. A very fun example that I always use is when Arnold Schwarzenegger was caught having an affair with his housekeeper. He had to make a public apology. And if you look at the video at the time of his public apology, and if you pause it and look frame by frame, he actually snarls at the point of his apology, but it's only for a few microseconds. And so being able to identify those on a frame by frame basis could be really exciting and could be really useful. So that's not really a technological issue in the case right now, because we have those frame by frame data. The issue is really coming to an agreement as to what those mean and deriving meaning from those. And it's something that even you touched on, and I think that is really important about this, is that this is just a tool, right? Facial expression analysis is a tool. AI are just a tool. They're the equivalent of going from a handsaw to a power saw, right? Now we've got this fantastic technology that we can use so much faster, but you still need the carpenter, you still need your expertise or trained research expertise to be able to make some sense and identify what they're looking at or how they're using this tool to answer their questions.
That is so fascinating. I mean, I guess it could really be used at the highest level of espionage. You're really trying to understand, like, behind the scenes, like if you slow down frame by frame every politician and analyze their microfacial expressions, or celebs that are like, you know, gossiping on the sidelines. And right now we have people who lip read. What are the celebs saying? You can face read, I imagine. Slow down.
And you know, it's funny you mentioned politicians. I did a study, again, I didn't publish it, but just for my own fun, where I looked at presidents, politicians, actors and athletes apologizing, right? Because if there's something that public figures do is screw up, and they have to apologize for it.
Yeah.
And the one thing that you will notice is athletes tend to be a little bit more sincere because they're more human, if you will. Mm-hmm. Politicians tend to be more angry when they're apologizing. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of reflects their own narcissism and hubris of why they seek politics in the first place. Actors tend to be a little bit more flat in their expression. They tend to be a little bit more neutral, like they're reading lines. And the one that we found, or the one that I found, where presidents were actually the best. And of all of the presidents that I had did it to, Ronald Reagan was the best.
He was the best.
The actor and the president.
Yeah.
And so when he was talking about Iran-Contra affair, he was angry when he needed to be angry. He was sad when he needed to be sad. His facial expressions matched his voice, and he delivered a powerful speech that synced perfectly with his face, with his actions and his words.
Wow.
It's interesting to think about, you know, whenever you have to go in front of things, even this right now, it's amazing when you start thinking about how self-conscious and aware you start becoming of your own facial expressions. And like I said, with any muscle, they can be trained. But yeah, certainly something that is very interesting and very fascinating we don't tend to think about.
That's so fascinating. Yeah, maybe that's the definition of good acting, is that your micro-expressions match your tones and your words and your everything.
That's it.
It's cool. Yeah, he was very presidential. And then I imagine Bill Clinton, you know, also
also very
presidential, good. But I imagine that there were micro expressions that did not quite work with his confessionals. But I love that you have that as a side research interest. You're my kind of guy. It's so good. Interesting.
Yeah, you know, the one thing, and the reason why I love doing these things is that I'm trained as a behavioral neuroscientist. I'm trained as a maze guy. Learning and memory is something of fascinating interest to me. I delivered pizzas in high school, and I love looking at cities and maps and all of that. But I love looking at facial expressions, because if there's one thing the internet is good for, and YouTube is wonderful for, people hurting themselves, doing all types of things, whether it's eating nasty jelly beans or having recordings of public apologies or you name it, you can find that information. And so as a researcher, I can gain access to data without having to pay people or ask them to come into a lab. I can just sort of crowdsource this information and do some fun research studies. They're not peer reviewed. They're not going to, you know, they're not going to win any Nobel Prize. They're not going to be published in Nature or anything like that, but they're fun studies to show how we as humans use these nonverbal tools in our lives.
You need to publish that, Jason. That is so good. I think we should do a little project together. We should publish
something. Yeah, it would be fun. Well, you know, if I may, many years ago, I had an idea from talking to a friend of mine to look at facial expressions to people who had what we call RBF, right? Like a resting face. And I woke up in the middle of the night and ran on all this at like 5 o'clock in the morning and found all these images and had this fantastic revelation about why RBF exists and how it's created.
Tell us.
So it's basically that people who have this RBF, their face, their neutral face, their resting normal neutral face shows contempt.
Oh.
And we as a perceiver, if you smile, smiles are contagious.
Yeah.
If you smile, you laugh, someone will walk into a conversation and immediately start laughing. Smiles and are contagious. If you're angry or if you're sad, I can be empathetic to that, right? If you're angry, I can avoid you or say, maybe we'll talk later. If you're sad, I can give you a shoulder to cry. But if you're contempt, you're looking at me like you're better than me.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at me like there's a difference between us. And that's what creates that bitchiness.
Mm-hmm.
Is that look of what? Why are you looking at me like that?
What muscles?
They're neutral.
Is the contempt is like frontalis or forehead frowning or?
It's a little bit of here. It's a little bit of a unilateral smile and action like around here in the dimpler area. It's a little bit in the eyes or in the frontal orbital.
Buccal or I don't know what, like buccinator area probably, and then orbital. Okay, so a little bit of a scowl.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mark.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
And the reason why I always say that facial expressions are trainable is I have a very crooked smile. And so even as a child, something in my fourth grade pictures, it's something I was aware of. And so I didn't like to smile, open mouth smile, because I was always very sensitive about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so my friends used to joke that my face would ruin the pictures because I never looked like I was smiling. And I always thought I was smiling.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was smiling, but then you look at the face and it wasn't. And it took a couple of years, plural, of training myself, of not only being able to go to a place where that could make me happy so I could smile and laugh, but then also training my face to be able to convey that emotion because, you know, my friends, Midwesterners, they're always, that's how we joke. But there was an element of truth there that my face was not, my facial expressions were not matching the emotions I was trying to convey. And
mm-hmm.
it's something that I had to do some work on, staring at myself in the mirror or looking at myself before an event, a wedding or an event or something like that to properly get my face to where it needed to be. So I'm truly empathetic to those who have RBF or who suffer from these things, because I know what that is like. I know that feeling.
It must be hard because they're completely unaware and it is their neutral resting facial tone. And I wonder, happens.
That's right. It tends to be more gender-based. It tends to be directed more towards women than men. I think that there's a benevolent sexist culture that women are expected to smile more than men. The software is gender agnostic. And in fact, men and women have RBF equally. We just don't call that men.
Interesting.
Right? The challenge that I used to say to everyone was, you know, like the number of times my sisters or my significant other, or my colleagues have heard, like, oh, baby, you should smile more. Your face is prettier if you smile more, right? I feel like everyone has had an experience where somebody has told them to smile more or they're prettier if they smile. And
Right.
I always push back and say, you should say that to a man. You should say, hey, bro, you'd be a lot hotter if you smiled, because how would that work out?
Yeah.
And, you know, we tend not to look at men in that way, right? And that's the same. There's a fascinating study to show that when men are emotional in a workplace, they're passionate. But when women are emotional in a workplace, they are over-dominating or overbearing or irrational. So we have these sort of sexist beliefs of the way that men and women should operate, right? Like, no man is going to compliment another man and tell me he has a beautiful smile. And then likewise, women have to hear from men like, yo, you should smile. These were some of the consequences that came out of the study that I had no idea I was even going to open up and find out. But the program, like I said, is gender agnostic. And so you look at faces and you say, wow, that's an RBF face. And then you look at it and it happened to be a biological male. And you're like, well, that's an RBF face. It doesn't matter who it is.
Interesting. That's so crazy. I imagine that this technology can at some point be used for improving facial symmetry and overall attractiveness. Like if you analyze an asymmetric smile or heavy eyelid on one side, like being able to detect which muscle groups should change or how to improve symmetry. Is that coming in the technology, the attractiveness analysis is?
There's no attractive analysis per se. Within our software, we do have the ability to look at the unilateral expressions, which is helpful. And so you can look at, say, the eye muscles around here and then look at left and right and then bilateral.
Okay.
So being able to separate left and right is really, really helpful. But there's no facial symmetry built into to our particular software. I'm sure there are probably some online that you could look up and say how symmetrical my face is or
Yeah.
how asymmetrical, because it's pretty asymmetrical, but how symmetrical someone's
Well, even that feature of dividing the face and analyzing each side separately helps because as a human and a clinician, like our eye images fuse, the face into one and kind of soften and blend the left and the right. So when you're analyzing a face, it's still important to be completely face blind to treat each side of the face separately almost because they're two
Absolutely.
sisters, not twins, Tell us a little bit about the other fascinating thing I thought was baby facial expressions because if there's a very pure form of expression, it must be in a baby that hasn't learned societal norms or
That's
conventions,
it.
right?
Yeah, our baby face reader is based on what's called facial action coding system, which is the program or the system of analyzing facial expressions created by Paul Ekman. So it's FACS, facts. And so baby face reader is based on baby facts. And as you said, it doesn't have the capacity to do all the range of emotions because babies don't have those full range of emotions, but it does give you some individual muscles that can help get to some of those more nonverbal understandings of babies. And in fact, one of the other ways that face reader was used was with a brilliant, absolutely brilliant career, brilliant scientist in Canada. He looked at pain and nonverbal patients. And so, you know, you can use this to look at someone's pain expression in the ICU or if they're in an emergency room setting, or maybe they have Alzheimer's or even Parkinson's and they're incapable of making verbal gestures. Can you identify if they're in pain based on their facial expressions? And so, babies to understand kind of what's going on in their babiness, and then even all the way to maybe the elderly. There's some really fascinating research applications. If there's any hope for all of this technology, is that there are some really brilliant, really talented research scientists out there doing some really amazing things in their labs at their universities.
Well, how do you foresee Face Reader and Noldis kind of collaborating with medical or aesthetic communities to sort of build and refine the role of this technology? Because I want to get Face Reader in my office. I'm pretty sure no one has it in their office yet in the US.
Yeah, you're
Maybe
absolutely right.
can it hit the clinical side where it comes into doctors' offices, or are we going to see it primarily in high-level technologies and analysis?
Right now, you're going to see it more in the high level. As an organization, as a company, we tend to stay away from being a diagnostic tool. We are not FDA approved. We are not in that level of analytics, but we're lucky to have innovative and creative thinkers like you, Dr. K, to be able to think about doing these kinds of technologies. So, you know, who knows? Maybe you'll be the first and maybe everyone else will get on board and maybe we can do some fun things.
I also think like I need to help you guys because as we do more and more and more with people's faces, with Botox, fillers, threads, fat transfers, like we are going to give you faces that don't have normal structure, normal muscles, and like facelift patients where we've done deep plane mass lifts and moved the muscle groups. So your technology is going to have to evolve because, I don't know, in the next 20 years, almost everyone's going to have some maintenance done in their face and the machine's going to need to figure out what used to be normal
it's true.
In front of it and how did that get tweaked with surgery or fillers or toxins.
That's true. In fact, maybe an update on the model itself so that you can say this is a face who's had some sort of procedure or work. And so then it can calculate expressions accordingly given that procedure and doesn't compare that to say an untreated or a naive or some a normal face, if you will.
Actually, they should start doing that work now where they do some facial scanning of these, all these ladies have had lip filler, or all these folks have had contouring of cheek and jaw, and these are all Botox faces because the analysis is going to be so way off and different. And I have found in my own practice and seeing some of the overfilled faces that are out there that the facial muscles can't move as they normally do when there's too much like hyaluronic gel filler in the lips or too much filler in the cheeks, that the contraction effort of the muscle is inhibited a little bit. So it blunts, it change facial expressions for sure. So I'd love to have do any project and
absolutely
get that micro expression change before and after interventions on the face.
Yeah, absolutely right. And something to think and remember is, you know, I'm going to go back to Tyra Banks on this and her smiles, but you really do smile with your eyes.
Yes.
And so, you know, it has nothing to do with this. It has everything to do with this. And we actually found this out during the pandemic that when we were masked, you could still tell if somebody was smiling.
Yeah.
Because you're smiling here.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you begin to paralyze these muscles or if you begin to freeze some of these muscles, your ability to convey the motion that you're feeling in your heart or in your soul, you want to make sure that that's able to project and onto the world so that people don't begin to look at you as a sort of a lifeless robot or something.
Tyra was very wise. She wise beyond her modeling. That was definitely important.
Oh, certainly. Absolutely.
Well, it's been a fascinating hour talking with you, Jason. I can't wait to meet you in person one of these days, hopefully, and come and visit you guys at Noldis and Face Reader. How often do you go to your headquarters in Europe?
I go to Europe a couple of times a year. Well, right now, it's about two or three times a year, which I'm very lucky to do. And I always love the Dutch are a wonderful people.
Yeah.
Speak English far better than I speak Dutch. My Dutch is terrible. Their English is always perfect and they're wonderful people. And it's always fun to go visit. I go back to our North American headquarters, which are outside of Washington, D.C. in a small town of Leesburg, a couple of times a year also. So I work remotely. My two colleagues are my two Aussie doodles. Sometimes it's fun to go visit and get out and go back to headquarters and interact with human beings. Because otherwise I spend my day here on screen interacting via Zoom and Teams and the like.
Exactly. What are your top five AI things that you're using in your, you know, personal workflow that are really streamlining life for you?
Yeah, I mean, the text generation is really fantastic to be able to understand and how to write something quicker or how to say, I'm struggling with how to come up with this. This is the idea I have. And then it spits it out. And then you kind of get some ideas and go from there. That's really fascinating. I've used the image generation. In fact, I'm a musician also, and a friend of mine recently passed away rather tragically. And I had the AI create an image of something that reminds me of them. And then I use that image to create a custom bass drum for my drums. So being able to use the image generation is really fantastic for people who can't draw or paint.
Which apps, what are they named? The ones that you've liked?
I use Microsoft Copilot a lot. ChatGPT is also a good one. Off the top of my head, there are about a dozen of them, depending on how you want to use it and which aspect and how free you want it. Suno, I believe it's Suno, is a music. So I was visiting my mother recently. She lives in Indiana, and she has two Shih Tzu dogs. And so my mom's a violinist, and so I had the image generation create an image of Shih Tzus playing the violin, and then I had the AI, a different program, write a song about them and have a violin solo from them. And so, yeah, that's all really fascinating. And then, even if you think about, Indiana Jones and the Cradle of Destiny, the new Indiana Jones, the de-aging technology they're doing, the fascinating thing with that is they used Harrison Ford's archival footage of his face from him playing Indiana Jones, Han Solo, all of the footage that they had of him throughout his entire career, they used to train a model to de-age him. So then he acted. They took his images that they trained, and then they put that over his face to de-age him for Indiana Jones. And so that's just
I had no idea
really
that they did that.
cool.
I'm gonna have to watch that now. So cool. Are there face reader, other face reading technologies out there as well that you're aware of that are interesting or we should look at as an audience?
Yeah, there are. There's an open source program called OpenFace. We have heard that some of the other scientists, it's not as validated. It's not as, say, peer reviewed, but it's certainly something that's more economical than, say, more commercial based solution. And in fact, if you go to our website, if you go to www.noldis.com and then navigate to Face Reader, you can upload your own images and you can have it test your own images and look at the expression on your own face based on your own image. If you want to go, or then send you an email and you can pass it to me, and I'm happy to analyze the faces for you or others. As I said, I love this stuff. It's something that I find absolutely fascinating, and it's a lot of fun.
I'm going to send you my face. I'm going to check and make sure there's no RBF going on.
Oh, after the last 5 or 6 years of analyzing literally thousands of emails that I've got from faces, I can tell you with the utmost certainty, Dr. K, you do not have any RBF whatsoever.
Well, see, your brain has machine learned all this technology.
It certainly has. It certainly has.
Well, there you have it, guys. That was a fascinating discussion on the future of reading faces and analyzing micro expressions. This topic is so fascinating to me. I hope you enjoyed it. Where can people find you if they want to reach out, Jason, or how should they reach out to Noldis? Do you have a social media handle or your corporate handle?
Yeah, we do. We are on Instagram. We are on LinkedIn primarily. We do have an X handle as well. If you want to email me directly, it's Jason, JASON, at Noldus, NOLDUS.com. I'm easy to find. I
There you go.
love talking about all these things. And yeah, it's always a pleasure.
Amazing. And there you have it. You can find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, DRKAY. And our website is the same, www.beautybydrk.com, where you can find our amazing skincare and look up some of the things we're doing with faces. This industry is going to evolve so much in the next 20 years. I'm so excited to start learning about all this technology early. You have to be early adopters of all this good stuff. That's it for
Absolutely.
now, guys. Stay happy, stay beautiful, and see you at the next podcast.